From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on the night of March 9th when the Oklahoma City Thunder hosted the Utah Jazz for an NBA contest. Oddly, Utah center Rudy Gobert was not on the floor, and there were rumors that at least one player had tested positive for the coronavirus. Half an hour later, the league was ready to make the call to suspend the entire NBA season, and down in New Orleans, players walked off the court mid-game. They decided, if we're shutting this thing down, we're not playing another two quarters. We're done. That was it for the NBA at the time, and for a lot of sports fans especially, that made things very real. Well, a month later, in Sports Illustrated, Stephanie Apstein wrote a piece titled, "Bursting the Bubble: Why Sports Aren't Coming Back Soon." She quoted Zach Binney, a PhD in epidemiology, who wrote his dissertation on injuries in the NFL and now teaches at Emory. Binney said, quote, "We will not have sporting events with fans until we have a vaccine," end quote. Apstein went on to write, quote, "Conversations with experts painted a picture of what exactly it would take to make these sports vacuums a reality. Before any of this can begin, before any league can come back, every person who would have access to their facilities will need to be isolated separately for 2 weeks to ensure that no infection could enter. That's players and coaches, athletic trainers and interpreters, reporters and broadcasters, plus housekeeping and security personnel. No one can come in or out. Food would have to be delivered. Hotel and stadium employees will have to be paid enough to compensate for their time away from their families. Everyone on site will have to be tested multiple times during this initial period." End quote. Apstein concluded that too much could go wrong, and we needed to prepare for a year without sports. But the NBA took the lead in finding a way. Now, what Apstein was describing was bubbled sports, essentially one big venue where the games could go on without fans and players could be quarantined within it. That's exactly what the NBA did down in Orlando. Baseball did not. Baseball came back on a limited schedule after all kinds of bickering over money between players and owners, reminding lots of people why baseball is trailing the other major sports in ratings and interest. And then football kicked off in the fall with a hodgepodge of rules in different states. No fans at Bills games, some fans at Browns games, college games in the South looking like nothing has changed with packed houses. We end the year with the Bills looking like a Super Bowl team and Governor Cuomo promising that there is a plan to get fans in the stadium for playoff games. Some fans limited capacity with testing in advance. Meanwhile, in Rochester, Red Wings fans are hoping to see baseball in April. Should sports have come back? Now, I'm biased on this. I say yes, but some leagues have been more careful and responsible than others. And sometimes what we see, yeah, we see it in baseball, but we really see it across the sports spectrum. We see money dominate, and we see the many people employed forgotten. I'm from Cleveland. It took Cleveland Cavaliers power forward Kevin Love stepping up to make sure that the vendors, the people who work at the stadium where the Cavs play, well, they were laid off, right? Kevin Love stepped up and said, "I'm going to pay you whatever you would have made working, because you need it, and I want to make sure you're made whole." Well, the Cavs have a billionaire owner. He didn't do it. The league didn't pool to do it. They did not care for the people who lost their jobs. They did get the games on, and they did it very effectively. Adam Silver deserves credit for that. But there's a lot of people who were forgotten there. Shouldn't take Kevin Love doing it himself. What about baseball? What about minor league baseball, which was shut down entirely? What about other sports leagues? There's a lot to talk about here. And now, what we have is outdoor sports very different than indoor sports. There's no evidence, not that I've seen, of an outbreak or really sort of traceable spread happening at outdoor sporting venues. That's because most of the ones that we're seeing, people are spread out pretty well. Fans are told to mask up for the full games. That's what's happening in Cleveland, where there's 12,000 fans a game. Kansas City, 17,000 fans a game, outdoor stadium. Governor Cuomo says the Bills will be allowed 6,700 fans. They'll have to get tested before they go into the stadium. To me, that seems a little bit like a waste of resources, given the lack of evidence of spread, and given 6,700 fans in a massive stadium is really well spread out. But it's a tough puzzle to figure out. Where do we go from here? What do we do next with Buffalo, with the Bills, with baseball in the spring, with sports throughout the winter? Did we come back too soon? Should we have come back at all? Scott Pitoniak is a longtime Rochester sports columnist and author, and we always love having Scott on the program. who speaks some good old truth to us. Hi, Scott. Welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having me. I hope I can speak some truth today, but we'll see.
Naomi Silver is the president and CEO of the Rochester Red Wings, who we have missed. But again, my bias is I'm hoping to see you across the street from us real soon. How are you, Naomi?
Great, Evan. Nothing would make me happier. So I'm with you there.
Well, there's a lot to talk about there. And let me start with you, Scott. Let's talk about the most immediate question at hand, which is you've got a potential Super Bowl team in Buffalo. And they're going to host at least one home playoff game, probably two, maybe even three. And the governor says 6,700 fans sounds about right. He's been consulting with Dr. Howard Zucker. The state's putting forward a plan for that. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. It does. I agree with you. I'm a little concerned about the testing before and after. And I think I worry right now. I mean, we obviously have very, very high numbers here in the Finger Lakes region in western New York. Erie County has always been among the, unfortunately, the state leaders in terms of positive COVID tests and so forth. But I would like to see it, certainly just from a selfish standpoint of someone who's covered the Bills for nearly four decades, and the fans finally getting maybe the season that they've always coveted, you know, that they were teased about back during the Jim Kelly era. They really do have a team that can legitimately win a Super Bowl, barring unforeseen circumstances. So I would like to see at least some of the fans go there. What I don't want to see, Evan, is like you know, celebrations, like, you know,
mobs that, of people tailgating.
Yeah. I know there's a tremendous urge for that. One of the things that's always appealed to me about sports is the communal aspect of it, of bringing together. And Lord knows during these polarized times, it's one of the few things that we can often agree upon within a region or beyond. I would love to see that, be able to have at least a little bit of a communal-like experience, you know, to celebrate it in person. That would be great. But I'm also concerned about, you know, what happened at Notre Dame, earlier this season when, Clemson, number one team in the country, goes in. Notre Dame upsets them. They had allowed 10,000 fans into Notre Dame Stadium, and I believe 9,999 of them wound up on the field together. That's just irresponsible and stupid. And, you know, so from the public safety standpoint, I understand why the governor is concerned, why the county executive, Mark Poehlenkarntz, is concerned in Erie County, if that were to happen. So, but I would like to see at least, you know, if it could be done responsibly, I would like to see Bills fans have what may be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I'm conflicted in that. I don't want to be all sort of paternalistic. You want to give people space to make their own decisions. But if you have, tens of thousands of people mobbing into the street or, drinking heavily and jumping through tables, which is apparently a Buffalo thing, which I don't know where that came from, by the way. Who was the first person to jump through a table? Have you ever journalistically pinned that one down, Scott Pitoniak?
No, I have not. I've seen a lot of other strange behavior in parking lots at Bills games while walking to the press box and so forth, running into buses and, diving onto lighted barbecues and so forth. But no, I don't know what the exact origin of that bizarre.
I bet it was Mike Catalana. I bet it was Mike Catalana. But regardless, I mean, there is a difference between the mobbed kind of partying before and after games that you could see, particularly in the playoffs, versus 6,700 fans or even 10,000, 12,000 in Cleveland, 17,000 in Kansas City, spread out in a huge outdoor stadium. And maybe I'm naive here. I'm sure I'm naive, Scott. But I would love to see the Bills say, hey, we are going to offer tickets to first responders and frontline workers who have already been vaccinated. Hey, come 3 hours of enjoying playoff football on us, and most of you couldn't even spread it, we hope, anyway. I would love to see that, but maybe I'm naive. What do you think, Scott?
No, I think it's a tremendous idea, and I would assume that when we finally are able to go back en masse to sporting events and concerts and so forth, I hope that we do recognize these heroes. And I'd go beyond, like, you know, first responders, healthcare. I want to see the checkout people at our, you know, at Wegmans. I mean, all these people who served us through an extremely traumatic and demanding time, I want them to be rewarded and acknowledged. And so I think it's a great idea. Is it going to happen? I don't know. You would have an outcry from, you know, people who have been, you know, season ticket holders for 30 some odd years or whatever. But under these extraordinary circumstances, I think it's a fabulous idea, and I would love to see that.
All right. Now let me ask you sort of a broader question. And listeners, if you want us to get back to the Bills with Scott Pitoniak, we can get back there. We can talk about the fact that in his rookie season, Josh Allen was the 36th ranked accurate thrower in the league, and there's not even 36 quarterbacks who regularly play. And this year he's in the top three, and God knows how that happened. You know, maybe God decided, maybe there is a God, and he decided if Buffalo gets a Super Bowl, it's when nobody can go. And if the Browns get a winning team, we hit them with COVID right before the end of the year so they avoid the playoffs. Maybe there is a God. Maybe this is what we needed to know, that there is one. We can get back to the Bills if you like, Scott Pitoniak. But generally speaking, from professional sports this year, baseball, we saw the NBA first. We saw baseball, football, hockey. Are you satisfied with how the leagues have addressed coming back in the ways they have?
To a certain extent. I mean, you know, I thought the bubble thing certainly worked. It worked for both the NBA, the National Basketball Association, and the National Hockey League. But then again, you're talking about sports with fewer numbers. And in the case, you know, we were talking about teams that were going into the playoffs, so you had even fewer teams. And so the NFL and Major League Baseball had a much more difficult task at hand because of sheer numbers and so forth. Baseball clearly had some major issues early on. You know, some people not following protocols, so entire teams, you know, were put on the shelf for a week. But the thing about baseball is it was able to make up the lost ground because you can play doubleheaders every day. You can't do that in football, you know. And I think I was bothered a little bit with the NFL, and in particular we saw this a couple of weeks ago at a game in Denver where the Broncos, their entire quarterback room was on the COVID list.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to play a guy who hadn't played quarterback since high school. And it showed, and the product was horrible. And I do think, like, sometimes, like, you wondered about its protocols. I mean, it put the poor Pittsburgh Steelers, and I know you as a Cleveland guy don't want to hear this, but it substitute any team, you know, for the Pittsburgh Steelers here. They had to play three games in 13 days. Anybody who understands the violent nature of professional football and the risk that these people put themselves at realize you cannot, the body was not made to handle three professional football games in 13 days. So that was really forced on the part of the NFL. Come hell or high water, they were going to play their schedule completely. And so I think there are times when, and you know, there were times like the day of the game, oh, so-and-so tested positive. Well, wait a minute, that so-and-so had close contact with these other people. Well, we're going to play the game, damn it, because it's already been pushed back to Tuesday night, you know?
Yeah.
I think there were some screw-ups there. And I think we didn't even get into college sports, but I think the NCAA has done the worst job because we're talking here, Evan, about, you know, athletes who, for whatever jokes you want to make, are not professional athletes. The vast majority of these young men and women are not going on to play professionally. And yet we carted them out there, and this and that. And now we're seeing, like, real ramifications here. I don't know if there's going to be another March Madness this year with what's happening in college basketball. And look at all the college football teams that wisely decided we're not going to a bowl game. So
yep.
I think the NCAA is really the governing body of college sports has really handled it the most poorly of them all.
In a moment, I want to kind of reframe where we go next here, because I think a lot of people are going to want to hear from Naomi Silver on just the likelihood that we are going to see the Red Wings in April. But let me just kind of close the loop on the point Scott's making there. When you think of NCAA football, what really the reason those athletes are out there is to make money for their universities. I mean, they are cash machines for their universities. And, you know, this is a pandemic, but we are putting them out there. And I don't and look at the way that some teams have filled their stadiums with fans. It is a hodgepodge of rules, no consistency, but the money is still flowing. And that has been what has defined NCAA football for a number of decades now. Now, a lot of people enjoy it. Occasionally I do. But I think the money aspect's a reality. With the NFL, to your point there, Scott, the Steelers, you're right. I'm a Browns fan, but I can say, I mean, I think that they're one of the best-run organizations in sports history, and they have been put through a hard schedule because they've done things well. Meanwhile, the Baltimore Ravens, they get an outbreak on their entire team, and they're told, well, okay, you don't have to play Sunday, maybe Tuesday. No, let's do it Wednesday. Let's give you a few days to get healthy. Well, look what happened last weekend. With the Cleveland Browns on the verge of finally making the playoffs again, the night before they fly to New Jersey to play the Jets, they find out that all of their wide receivers are close contacts because they got in, I guess they got in a workout pool and they thought they were spread out enough, but the league said based on pictures they weren't spread out enough. So on Sunday morning, hours before the game, the Browns coaching staff and their quarterback had to meet in a hotel parking lot with practice squad guys who hadn't caught an NFL pass this year and said, here are the routes, dudes. Get ready. I mean, hours before a game. And the league didn't tell the Browns you got until Tuesday, you got until Wednesday to get healthy, like the Ravens did. It seemed bizarre. And, yeah, the Browns went out there with half a squad on this past Sunday. Very, very strange circumstances. Seems very inconsistent, but at least the money flows. So, yes, I'm a Cleveland fan. I'm a sports fan. But what I see is I see the NBA is largely doing it the best, and I see other leagues putting what looks to me like money first. I'm generally glad they're out there, but I do want them safe. But I don't think anybody's done it quite as well as the NBA, Scott. I guess that's where I am. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
to you?
I would agree. I think the NBA has an advantage in that it's not a numbers sport. Like, does not have a huge roster. You know, I think it's a 12-man roster.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Right. Not 50. You know,
you're not dealing with 53 or 25 in the case of baseball and stuff. So, and when you do it in a bubble, you certainly can control things a lot easier, you know. And but yeah, I would agree that they did do a better job, and but they weren't doing all their teams. They were doing, you know, pretty much a playoff or, you know, clinch a playoff spot, like teams that were still in contention. So it was not apples to apples in the comparison. But I would agree overall, I think they did the best job of monitoring this difficult situation.
Well, Naomi Silver is president and CEO of the Rochester Red Wings, and of course we lost minor league baseball, and we missed the Wings, who have the best social media account and the best attitude out of anybody I've ever seen having to deal with this stuff. Naomi, when you look at the pro sports leagues, what have you seen that you say they did that well, or I would have done this differently, or this made sense to me and this didn't make sense to me?
Well, actually, I don't think it could have been handled much differently than what it was. You know, at the big league level, they get their television revenues as long as they're playing, and that means everything. You know, they don't need fans in the gates the way we do in the minor league. Mm-hmm. So as long as they were able to play, even when they weren't allowed to have fans in the stands, they were getting something out of it. The players were getting good paid, and, you know, that worked out. You know, for the minor leagues, you know, take our situation, for example, or those teams in New York State, we couldn't have fans in the stands at all. So for us, you know, fielding a team without fans would mean all of the expenses and none of the revenues. So, you know, we're putting players up, sending them on the road, travel expenses, equipment expenses, and all of that with no revenue just would not have worked for us. So, you know, the big leagues did, I guess, what they had to do in terms of, you know, once they're playing at the big league level, and I think it'll be this year a similar situation. They can't play without having AAA guys on the ready for getting called up, whether it's because big league guys go down to COVID or injuries, they've got to have AAA guys ready. So I think Major League Baseball wants to field our teams this year at the AAA level, and so on down the line for AA and single A. But again, you know, the key for us is the number of fans we're going to be allowed to have in the stadiums. Very important to us. So, you know, we're hopeful. I guess, you know, a couple of months ago, I wouldn't have imagined that the vaccine was this close, and we were much more concerned than I guess we are today, with a little bit better a comfort level and thinking that, you know, if we have some control over this, we know that there will be some opportunity to have fans in the stands.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that. And listeners, as we do that, I'd love to hear from you. I mean, would you go to a sporting event, outdoors, indoors? Are you hoping to be back at seeing the Red Wings in April or perhaps sometime this summer? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Or you can email the program connections at WXXI.org. So right now, Naomi, what is the expectation and the understanding of what will be happening with the Red Wings this year?
Well, we understand that Major League Baseball will, once they've decided when they'll be able to start, and I'm not sure they'll start on time, but we will follow shortly thereafter. And, you know, as you probably know, last season, which was just a few months ago, we had the we carried the taxi squad at Frontier Field. Yep. For the Toronto Blue Jays. So, you know, there was baseball going on, but nobody in-house in terms of fans. But, you know, we hope that this year that it'll be more, there will be actual games. We'll actually be playing an opponent instead of the inter-squad games that they were doing, that we were doing in at Frontier Field this past summer. So we hope to be able to get back to some level of normalcy. Again, key to everything for us is the number of fans in the stands. You know, we'd love to be able to have, we've got to assume that there's going to be some distancing required, and that makes sense. If that's necessary at the time, we can certainly do that. You know, a 11 or 12,000 seat facility, which we have, you know, if we're at 10%, not nearly as wonderful as if we were able to have, you know, half as many fans in the stands, but we'll make do with what we can as long as, you know, travel isn't restricted from state to state. You know, we'll be playing as far south as probably Florida this year, potentially. So we've got to be able to travel in an unrestricted way, both flights and some shorter bus rides.
Yeah. How much do you think the rate of vaccination will impact what you're allowed to do with fans in the stands this year, Naomi?
It's hard to tell. Honestly, we've got to follow the science and follow the scientists, follow what, you know, the Department of Health in each of our communities will recommend. So I really don't know. And we don't have a good sense of how many people will have been vaccinated by April or May. And I guess we wait and see how that is coming along. It seems to be going fairly well. We're excited about that. You know, so many question marks yet.
Yeah, it was mid-November when we first got the Pfizer news and then quickly after that the Moderna news on vaccines. And that comes faster than a lot of experts thought possible, not recklessly fast, but I mean, there's a lot of good reasons that they were able to do this, but it's close to a best case scenario. Now, having said that, the vaccine rollout has been a little bit, it hasn't been warp speed, it's been waltz speed, but that's because there hasn't been a national plan. But I think in New York State, they're doing pretty well. What was it like for you, Naomi, when it came to that news in November? Did it feel like, hey, here's one more piece of the puzzle that's going to make sure that we're on the field and that maybe we even have people there watching us?
you know, it was such a breath of fresh air, such good news at a time when we weren't getting a lot of good news at all. It made all the difference in the world. We could suddenly start focusing on the possibility of having baseball again and having people in the stands. It just made all the difference in the world. At that point, it was like turning the page for us and allowing us to think positively about where we might be come spring.
Yeah. Scott, what did you make of the vaccine news? I mean, for me, it was like the first moment that I think I felt like we're really going to get past this thing. And it's going to be sooner. I mean, it's not going to be one day. There's not going to be one day in a parade and everybody's vaccinated and it's a miracle, but that we're going to do this. What did you think, Scott?
Yeah. I mean, certainly that was like the first flicker of hope, that you could have, because we had no idea like how long, this process was going to take and so forth. So when it was definitive and official, I felt really good. That said, I think it's not going to be, snap your fingers and everything's back to normal. I think 2021 in sports and in life is going to be a transition year. It's not going to be like the previous years, but hopefully then we get through this and, better days are ahead in 2022. That said, for sports, I'm hoping that, the Wings are going to be able to play a complete schedule with fans in the stands. And as Naomi said, we'll find out what percentage will be allowed. And it's going to be a different type of year to be sure. But certainly, yeah, I was incredibly encouraged. And finally, we got a flicker of hope here. Yeah. When we got word.
Yeah, absolutely. And before I grab Ted and Henrietta on the phone, Naomi, early in this pandemic, there was some speculation about when the vaccine eventually came, or vaccines, I should say, that perhaps we would, I want to say this in a way that doesn't sound sort of dystopian, but be able to sort of identify people who've been vaccinated or even who have had COVID and recovered to be a little bit more flexible with where they can be and how they can support the economy. I don't hear anything like that anymore, or at least right now. I mean, is there any consideration that, for example, sporting events could say, hey, if you've been vaccinated, you can sit in this section and we can pack it. This section will be more sparsely filled. Anything like that? I haven't heard anything like that.
I haven't heard anything like that. Unfortunately, we don't have to be the trailblazers there.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't want to be the one that is going to decide you can come in and you can't.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all over the place. It's, would you let people in who are under a certain age because they're less likely to contract the illness? Too many variables there. We want to be able to open the doors, and if you feel comfortable enough to come, then maybe you're in a position to do so. But if you have qualms about it, you may be the unvaccinated and want to be staying home at that point.
Yeah, I take that point. Let me grab Ted and Henrietta on the phone. Go ahead, Ted.
Hi, Naomi. I'm a season ticket holder, and I wish I could speak for every single one of them. But as soon as the Red Wings get back on the field, I will be there. I will be there waving pennants and buying hot dogs and cheering on the Wings, whoever they may be. You may remember my daughter and I talked with you in line at the Orlando airport a year ago, looking forward to the opening day of 2020, which never happened.
I do remember that. I do remember. Oh, Ted,
well,
thank you so much.
Well, I remember watching games at your dad's ballpark, watching Luke Easter hit those home runs up into the light towers, and I love the Red Wings, and so we really hope that things can get going this summer. That's my goal, it's my wish, and whatever we got to do, your loyal fans will be there, I'm sure.
I really appreciate that so much. Thank you.
And
fingers crossed.
Scott, Yeah, and for Scott, I would love it if you could get together and do an update on Silver Seasons, A New Frontier, best book ever about the Red Wings. If you did it, I'd buy 100 copies.
well, thanks. I'll mention that to the publisher.
Yeah, please do.
You know, for a second, I thought this was a really nice phone call until I realized it was Scott Pitoniak's agent.
Yeah, that's right. No, I assume that at some point down the road here, I think we have to let the new relationship have a few years here, and that's with the Washington Nationals. And by the way, you know, Evan, Naomi, not only did she and her staff have to deal with, you know, this horrible pandemic that wiped out a season, but also the uncertainty that the Major League Baseball's realignment here of minor league clubs and you know, there was no guarantee that we were going to continue to have a minor league team. It was you know, there were things that were up in the air, and you know, fortunately I think it's worked out well. And so, you know, fans will have another thing to look forward to in addition to having baseball again after the pandemic, to have this beginning of a new relationship that hopefully will be a long and fruitful one with, you know, a team that was World Series champions just a couple of years ago, the Washington Nationals.
Let's talk about that on the other side of this break. And we're also going to hit some of your email. CT sent a note about testing Bills fans before games, wants to talk about. And got an email just about outbreaks at sporting events, you know, whether we've got evidence of that. We'll talk more about that with our guest, Scott Pitoniak, who, of course, is a longtime journalist, a Rochester sports columnist and author. Naomi Silver, president and CEO of the Rochester Red Wings, and I'm staring across the street at the stadium that soon enough will have a crack of the bat again. Let's take that break and come right back with them on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, one of our favorite annual traditions, Rochester's favorite books. Favorite books 2020 will include a wide range of selections, and if you've expanded your reading list or even thought about maybe reading some more during the winter months during this pandemic, we'll have all kinds of ideas for you and for your kids. Rochester's Favorite Books, 2020 on New Year's Eve. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So, Naomi Silver, let's talk a little bit about your new relationship with the Washington Nationals. You know, when we heard that the relationship with the Twins was ending, it certainly seemed for a few days. I mean, nobody really, I hope, believed that Rochester was not going to have a minor league team, but there's no certainties, at least not that we knew of. How much uncertainty behind the scenes was there? What were those days like?
Well, you know, anything can happen in baseball. We learned that because, you know, just down the road in Batavia, they've lost a team and that whole league has shut down. You never know, but we do believe that because Rochester has such a great history and really a wonderful fan base here, you know, what more can you want from the city? We've got to freshen up Frontier Field, and beyond that, we felt pretty certain that we'd be able to maintain a team. The idea that it's the Nationals, oh, I'll tell you, we were very excited to hear from the Nationals. But we've gotten nothing but more excited since then because our fans really it resonated well with our fans. You know, people didn't know who the Minnesota Twins were when they came here in 2003, but everybody knows who the Nationals are and everybody's been to Washington, and it's just much more relatable right from the get-go. So we're very excited about it.
Well, anything that will change for fans and their experience of the team based on this relationship, Naomi?
Well, you know, right now it's a little bit hard to tell. I think they're going to do their best to give us a team that our fans can really relate to and enjoy. I'm very excited about the prospects there. And, you know, things that will be occurring that are going to be required by Major League Baseball, which is, you know, what some of all of the ruckus has been about. Major League Baseball and the commissioner has wanted to improve things for the players, And in Rochester, things haven't been too bad for the players with a stadium that's only 24 years old. Some stadiums need a lot of work, but Frontier Field needs its adjustments also to provide more workout facilities and more space for the players. And we'll be going through that, and it's going to take funding. But people are pretty supportive of it, knowing what Red Wings baseball sports mean in general to a community like Rochester. It's very important, and we're looking forward to this next chapter. You couldn't ask for more than a team like the Nationals. And as Scott said, you know, coming that near to have come off of a World Series win, boy, that we're pretty lucky to have that opportunity, I think.
Well, let me see here. Mike writes to the program to say the college decisions, especially with basketball, were unreasonable and irresponsible. It's a close contact sport, and that decision was based on money. Scott Pitoniak, what do you think of that?
Well, yeah, everything that we've talked about has been based on money. Why did the NBA insist on, you know, going through with its playoff schedule? Why did the NHL? Why did Major League Baseball? Why did the NFL? It is about money. And I totally agree. Yeah. With the NCAA. But what's different with the governing body of college sports is that we're talking about, you know, we're talking about amateur athletes. Yes, I understand they're there on scholarship and that there's a certain small, much smaller than people realize, percentage of Division I athletes, even from the Power Five conferences, that go on to play professionally and have, you know, long professional careers. It's a very, very small number and so forth. They're not protected. You know, the NCAA, to its credit, has allowed, you know, an extra year of scholarships and that sort of thing and so forth. But, you know, from a health standpoint, you were subjecting these young men and women to situations that you wouldn't with a normal student, a quote unquote normal non-athlete student and so forth. So it was it's always about money. And I understand that to a certain extent, but it does, you know, cause you to pause and wonder, like, you know, how far do you go to push this? And the interesting thing about college, major college sports, is that they lost March Madness last year. And that is a $1 billion loss in terms of, television and advertising revenues. And that has put a real crimp on even the biggest of the athletic programs throughout college sports. And so, you know, that made it, from their standpoint, even more imperative that they get these televised games in, even though they were going to continue to take a loss in the gate by not having fans in the stands at most of these places and so forth. But yeah, it is about money. And as you pointed out earlier, Evan, it's always been about money with big time college sports, that, these unpaid athletes, other than their scholarships and, you know, this whole issue of being able to use their images and so forth, which is coming to the front now, they've had to do it, for the good of whatever your alma mater is, you know?
Yeah, and to Naomi's point earlier about, you know, the differences across leagues in terms of television revenue, you know, very, very different in certain sports. I mean, some it's all about TV revenue and some it's about the gate, especially in minor league sports. And so when you look at, I think, Scott, the NCAA, whether it's basketball, football, I think some of the cynicism that the public has is related to the fact that, number one, these billion-dollar industries are competed by athletes who are not paid. And I know, I mean, somebody's going to send me an email saying they get a free education, which is valuable. And I'm not downplaying, but they're generally unpaid. The coaches make millions upon millions of dollars. And it feels like the money, the pie, gets concentrated at the top. Whereas in communities like Rochester, the Red Wings are an employer. And, you know, there's not a massive TV contract. If they play, that's helpful. If they play and can bring people into the game to watch, that's a whole other deal. I mean, Naomi, how many people are employed by the Red Wings?
Well, throughout the course of the season, we'll be employing 700. So it makes a big difference.
No question about that.
In the community.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's why I guess I see that in very, very different terms there. And listeners, your mileage may vary on this stuff. So let me get a couple more comments here. CT says, testing Bills fans on the day of the game when direct care providers working in group homes for the developmentally disabled are not getting tested is such a waste of resources. That's from CT. So let's hit that point in a couple of ways here. First of all, Governor Cuomo said last week that the state plan for the moment is 6,700 fans at Bills games for the playoffs, and they'll get tested half an hour before they go in, and then they'll have information with the team to contact trace after the game. That is a lot of resources. I take that point. And testing, especially this time of year, has been, you know, more clogged up. Although I will also say I went to MCC on Monday. I got tested on Monday. I got my results back last night. That is a remarkable turnaround. But I take CT's point here. Are we prioritizing tests for sports when we shouldn't or don't need to? And I think that the state really ought to consider that. I do agree with CT on that point. Now, when it comes to rapid testing, there's different. That term means different things. I mean, it's one thing to have the nasal swabs and to have a plan to get those tested quickly. It's another to use the so-called spit tests or antigen tests that we've heard about for so long that aren't really widely available yet, but I think 3 months ago, a lot of epidemiologists were hoping they would be. And I guess I'm wondering, Naomi Silver, I mean, I keep hearing, you know, only in the background that we could see a different kind of test, not the nasal swab, not the deep nasal swab, but a so-called saliva test, which would just be a light nasal swab on a piece of paper, 15 minutes results, not quite as accurate as the nasal swab, but very accurate in determining if you have the virus and are contagious with the virus. And I keep hearing from epidemiologists that if we had these outside malls and sporting events and schools and offices, that we could have them just about everywhere if we decided to prioritize it. But I haven't seen it prioritized. Is there any thought that if you're going to go to the Red Wings, get there 15 minutes early, get a little swab, a quick swab, not a deep swab, and then you'll get your results in 15 minutes and you can go in? I haven't heard that either. But, I mean, epidemiologists think we could get there eventually.
I haven't heard that either. I can't imagine that that would be readily available to us, and you know, who would administer them? Would it have to be a healthcare professional? Just too many unknowns in that regard. But you know, certainly whatever we have to do and whatever we can do, it would be taken up for consideration. There's no question. We want to get people into the ballpark, so we'll do whatever is going to be the proper protocols at the time.
Mm-hmm. Let me read an email from Sarah writing from the Finger Lakes. She says, no to pro sports. Listen to yourselves. It's all about big money versus true sportsmanship. Sad. The Pittsburgh Steelers should not play 3 games in a row in a violent game. What is this, gladiators of the Roman days? Violent, crazy fans jumping through tables? Really? Overlooking of low-income workers at concessions? And is there a God? Come on, Evan, this is not a spiritual question. That's from Sarah. Sarah, I was really sort of being sarcastic about the God thing. You know, we all, I mean, I don't know. People find God in very different places. And, I'm mostly kidding when I say as a Cleveland fan, you start to question the existence of God given the Cleveland sports outcomes over the years. And last Sunday was a good example. But that's a joke. And I take the point on football. For some people, football is a game that has become just too much evidence of long-term physical health risk and not worth watching and supporting. And I know, Scott, you've wrestled with that, and I think the league has tried to make it a safer sport. What do you say to someone like Sarah who says, you know, who are we as a people? This is too violent.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, I have struggled with this, particularly with, you know, the revelations in recent years about, you know, the impact of CTE. You know, in the violence, this is a head-banging sport. There's no other way around it, and you can only make it so safe. And I applaud the league for at least trying to do that with rules changes and equipment and protocols, where you know your bell is rung and you don't just go right back into the game. No, you're going to sit out. You may sit out for weeks or whatever. No, I get her point, and I understand why there are people who do not like the sport. I get that completely. As far as sports don't matter, you know, I've seen that it does matter at times, and it can. I talked about that communal experience. I think it's important for us to have those experiences, and whatever might bring us together, it might be music, you know, in a concert or whatever.
Sure.
The arts, theater, movies. You know, I'm all for that because I think we've become increasingly a disconnected society, and we've seen the mental stress that this pandemic has caused, the isolation, and the ill effects of that. We've all felt that. I do think that you know, bringing people together for a common cause, and you know, if you don't like football, that's fine. If it's a concert, if it's a theater, whatever. I think it is a positive thing, and that's what I've seen in sports. And I've seen that power of sports to help the healing process. I've seen it after 9/11. I was in Yankee Stadium, Game 3, you know, that first World Series game, and I saw a wounded city at least have a respite. I'm not saying sports is the healer or whatever, but there are positives, to this experience. And I see it all the time when I go to Wings games here at Frontier Field. It's beyond the baseball on the field. It's much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's an opportunity to be there with friends and family and strangers who you might normally not see or whatever, and be out and about. And we just don't have, that many opportunities, it seems, nor do we take advantage of them in a society that's increasingly disconnected or isolated at a time when we're more connected than ever, right, through our technology.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, go ahead, Naomi.
I was going to say, you know, how many opportunities does an adult have to get up and get charged and you know, yell in joy over something? Sports gives you that opportunity, that outlet, that excitement. And, you know, there aren't too many ways that we have that. And I know that I missed that over the summer, you know, no opportunity to really get fired up about something positive. And, you know, as Scott said, that's the positivity of sports and being around people and having that common interest and goal of winning. It's just, there is something to be said for that I don't know if too many things can replace that.
Well, and so, Sarah, I just want to say I take your point and I'm listening, but I would, if you can find a piece written by the best baseball writer ever, Roger Angel, who turned 100 this year and is still outstanding. I mean, Scott is a close second, but Roger Angel to me is a legend. And he wrote a piece in the 1970s about why sports matter to people and how come, and it's kind of silly, but it does matter. And it's exactly what Naomi just described and what Scott just described. It's in the same way that music can matter to people, or we all have different passionate pursuits. If it makes you feel alive and a sense of community, it's great. And maybe you're the kind of fan who doesn't remember what the Red Wings record a couple of summers ago was, but you were there, you had fun being together in community, you wanted to show your kid that you could have been a pitcher, and you wonder why the Red Wings gun only shows 58 miles an hour on your fastball. But everything, you know, I'm sure they'll work on that technology. There are those moments that, you know, are hard to describe, you know, and hard to sort of sum up, but sports is one of the outlets that gives people a chance to have that. That's not me saying bring everything back. I mean, I think there have been some big mistakes in the last year, but I also think there have been some successes. And I just want to conclude on a point. One listener asked, you said earlier that we don't have evidence of outbreaks in outdoor sporting events. We don't, but let me explain what I mean by that. I'm not being a booster for sports. I read some of the really, really plugged in sort of pandemic writers, and they are tracking where contact tracing takes the biggest outbreaks. And we haven't seen any big outbreaks traced to a movie theater, and we haven't seen any big outbreaks traced to outdoor sporting events. That doesn't mean it hasn't happened, but it means that there are reasons that we can try to approach these things carefully and confidently. That doesn't mean packing a movie theater, and it doesn't mean every seat full in an event. But there are advantages. Outdoor sporting events are advantageous compared to indoor. We know that. There's no question about that. You can separate people if the fans are behaving and wearing masks. That's a big advantage, too. So I think we're ready for that. I really do. And Naomi, maybe 30 seconds. Last thoughts from you as you get ready for the season. I think we're I'm not doing this as a booster to you or the Wings. I do think journalistically we have enough evidence to say that this is something that we can do pretty safely.
And I certainly hope so. You know, for us, it's not all about the money. We'd love to be able to break even. And if we can do that, we'll be playing ball.
Wow. Powerful stuff. And thank you. And Scott Pitoniak, some final thoughts from you as we think about sports in our pandemic lives.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a process. We're not going to have packed ballparks and stadiums or whatever, but we'll take anything at this point. We'll take the breadcrumbs, you know, just to go down the path to be back to hopefully somewhere near where we once were. And so I'm looking forward optimistically to a much, much, much happier and healthier 2021.
Scott, I think the Bills win the Super Bowl this year. I just want to put that on the record. I've said that for two months, by the way.
I think they're playing as well, if not better, than anybody over the last month. So who knows what can happen. Please just don't have a positive Josh Allen have a positive COVID test on the eve.
No,
of the
wait.
Super Bowl.
They've got him in Please. Bubble wrap outside that stadium, yeah. Man. Come on. You know that. And also, thank you to the Minnesota Vikings for willingly parting with maybe the best.
Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, the most dangerous offensive player in the league, just gifted to the Bills. Good timing. Have fun in the postseason watching it. And I just want to say to Naomi, good luck to you. We'll see you across the street soon down here in High Falls.
Amen.
Naomi Silver, the president and CEO of the Rochester Red Wings. Scott, always good, my friend. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It's always fun.
Scott Pitoniak, longtime Rochester sports author, the best chronicler of sports history locally. What an author. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you on New Year's Eve with our Rochester's best books of the year.